Welcome to It's About Florida. I'm Lynn Hatter. The Florida Education Association has spearheaded a years-long fight against the state's corporate tax scholarship program. The system lets businesses earn a tax credit in exchange for donating money to send low- and middle-income kids to private schools. The teachers' union argues that is an unconstitutional diversion of would-be public dollars to private entities. Last year, a judge tossed out the suit, ruling the union didn't have standing. But recently, the FEA was back in court, and a judge is now deliberating on whether the lawsuit can go forward. The program has powerful backers, including most of the Republican-led legislature, families who rely on the program, and the businessman who started it all, John Kirtley. Today, we speak with Kirtley about the tax credit scholarship and why he thinks the future of education is choice. Florida's largest teachers union is once again taking the state's corporate tax scholarship program to court. The union argues it diverts would-be tax dollars for private use. But it's still not clear if the challengers have a legal leg to stand on. Kate Payne has the story.
The Florida Education Association is challenging Step Up for Students, a program that helps low-income students go to private schools. Businesses can donate scholarships in exchange for a tax break from the state. Thousands of teachers rallied against the program earlier this year.
There is no evidence from any other nation that replacing a public school system with a privatized choice system produces anything but social, economic, and racial segregation. While making the rich richer at the expense of our students, so we have to say,
enough is enough.
That's FEA president and the case plaintiff Joanne McCall. She calls the scholarship program unconstitutional, diverting would-be tax dollars to private use. A Leon County judge threw out the case last year, but the union is trying again with the First District Court of Appeals, which heard oral arguments this week. But they can't argue the merits just yet. First, the union must prove they have legal standing, the sort of revolving door that allows certain cases into court. Steve Johnson is a professor at the Florida State University College of Law, and he says standing is tricky.
And I'm not saying that that has happened here, but standing is too often used by judges as a way of avoiding cases that they don't want to decide. As a result, the court, if it doesn't want to hear a case, will announce some change in the standing doctrine, or if it does want to hear a case, will announce some change in the standing doctrine that allows it to do what it wants.
Here are the union's two main arguments for getting their case heard. First, the scholarship program harms the public system by diverting students and funding to the private sector. But John Kirtley, chair of Step Up, believes the program is a boon to public schools.
If you're taking the two hardest case kids out of a classroom, the teacher's job probably gets easier. It's also helping the taxpayers. Because the law limits the scholarship to 80% of what the state must send to a district to educate a child, it saves the taxpayers money.
But researchers say it's difficult to compare outcomes because private schools aren't held to the same standards as public schools. Maritza Golic is an education policy professor at Florida State University.
So they take tests such as the Stanford Achievement Test, the Terra Nova, the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, or other types of tests, but they don't take the FSA, the Florida Standard Assessment. So it's a little difficult to compare outcomes between, you know, two groups of students who take two different tests.
The union's second argument is taxpayer standing, the ability of Florida taxpayers to challenge appropriations by the legislature. It all boils down to this: can tax credits be considered public money? Here's Judge Lori Rowe in this week's hearing.
The monies here never enter the public treasury, and they're not revenues. A tax credit is a far cry from, you know, an expenditure or an appropriation by the legislature, and we said so.
Still, Steve Johnson says it could go either way.
If you accept the notion that foregoing tax revenues in substance is the same thing as getting the revenues and spending the revenues, wow. Imagine how much more there could be by way of litigation. That's a genuine concern for the courts.
In 2015, Leon County Circuit Judge George Reynolds threw out the case, saying the union did not have legal standing. The First District Court of Appeal is still considering the case. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
As we just heard from Kate Payne, the fate of a lawsuit over the corporate tax scholarship program sits in the hands of a judge. At the center of the battle is the state's oldest scholarship funding organization, Step Up for Students. Its founder is Tampa businessman John Kirtley. Step Up for Students began as a privately run venture, and in its first year, it got more than 12,000 requests for 750 scholarships. Kirtley has remained largely outside of the spotlight, but a few weeks ago, he made a rare public appearance before the Economics Club of Florida to talk about what he calls his passion for education. And along the way, he criticized the FEA for fighting the tax scholarship program. Here's his speech to the club.
I'd like to begin by asking a simple question, and that is, what is public education? And usually when I ask that question, I get a pretty simple answer. And that's, well, John, it's the public schools. And when I came up in the public schools in Iowa and after that in Florida, that answer probably sufficed. But is that simple answer adequate for today? Is what I would call the old definition of public education adequate? What's the old definition in my mind? Raising taxpayer dollars and handing all the dollars over to the school districts. The school districts run all the schools in a fairly uniform manner. And then we assign children by their zip code. That was public education. And it worked incredibly well for over 100 years for almost all children. It worked incredibly well for me. I got an amazing education in Iowa and at Fort Lauderdale High School. But Florida is an incredibly diverse state today. Is a one-size-fits-all, top-down system where we assign kids by their zip code, is that going to produce excellence for every single child? I'm not sure that it is. But fortunately, Florida is a leader, probably the leader in the country, in moving towards what I would call a new definition of public education. And that is this: raising taxpayer dollars to educate children, and then letting parents direct those dollars to different providers and even different delivery methods that best suit their individual children's learning needs. And we are so fortunate that we have districts, school districts in our state, that are leaders in the country at moving towards this new definition. Where I come from in Hillsboro, we have magnet schools. You may have heard of them. These magnet schools are schools run by the district, but chosen by parents, and they have a unique curriculum or unique environment. In Hillsboro, we have an amazing arts magnet called Blake High School. Incredible. Send kids to Broadway right after high school. We also have an incredible robotics program at another high school. I'm very proud to have donated to and raised money for two single-gender middle schools in Hillsboro, which are incredible. They take kids from the poorest backgrounds, and both of them are A schools. We also now have what are called charter schools. You may have heard of those. Charter schools are simply schools of choice run by a private organization under a contract with the school district. I'm very proud to have donated to and fundraised for a charter school in my district in the southeast corner of Hillsboro. It's very rural there. And there's a K-8 school in the farmland there that's run by a nonprofit that's worked with migrant workers for over 50 years. And about 15 years ago, they realized they knew this population so well, they should start a school for the kids. incredible school, A-rated school. They take kids that are 2 years behind or more with little English and teach them very, very well. We have districts like Lee County that have been experimenting with open enrollment for over a decade. In Lee County, if there's room at a school, a parent in Lee County can send his kid to any public school in the district, if there's room. And of course, parents in the neighborhood get priority. We now have parents actually customizing their own children's education to an incredible degree, combining delivery methods and providers at the same time. And my favorite example to use in this regard is the son of the gentleman who runs our nonprofit in Tampa, who, by the way, is the former president of the Pinellas Teachers Union. When his son was a senior in high school, this is a few years ago, here was his first semester senior year. Two classes at his zoned regular public high school, two classes over the internet through the Florida Virtual School, and two classes at St. Pete College, all funded by the taxpayers, all at the same time. That is the future of public education, in my opinion. Now, understand this. Right now, over one-third of the kids in Florida funded by the taxpayers in K-12 do not attend their traditional zoned public schools, over one-third. In Dade County, that figure is over 50%. And I applaud the districts who are moving towards this new definition. The superintendent in Dade is outstanding. He is probably the best in the country at providing leadership and creating these options. I celebrate them for moving away from this uniformity. Now, I want you to imagine that you are a poor single mom in a low-income neighborhood in Jacksonville. You have a seventh grade son who is going the wrong direction. He's failing all his classes. It's not his school's fault, his zone school. It's a great public school. And I'm the first to say that anyone who teaches in any public school, but certainly a public school in an urban environment, is a hero. It's just not the right fit for her son, and he's going the wrong direction. She knows it, and she's desperate. Now, on her street, in her neighborhood, there's a school called Potter's House Christian Academy. It's a real school. K-12 school, low-income neighborhood, 95% graduation rate, over 90% go on to higher education or the military. Wouldn't you want the ability to send your kid to that school? What if you could save taxpayers money by doing so? The tuition's $5,000, less than half of what we spend in Duval educating children in the public school system. I believe poor parents must be empowered to choose the right environment for their children, no matter who runs it. But understand this, I am not a private school advocate. I don't think that private schools are better than public schools. I work with individual public schools. I've given more money to individual public schools than I have individual private schools. I just strongly believe that low-income parents have to be empowered to choose whatever environment's going to work to prevent their child from becoming a statistic. There are some children who will only make it. I've talked to them. Maybe you've talked to them. There are some children who will only make it if they're able to go to a school that has the environment that perhaps a faith-based school does. If not, they will be a statistic. In 2001, the Florida legislature did something to help parents and children like this. They created the Tax Credit Scholarship Program. Under this program, companies can donate to a state-approved nonprofit and get a tax credit for doing so against certain state taxes. Low-income parents apply to the nonprofit, and income is the only criteria. And if they get a scholarship, they can use that scholarship to either pay for transportation to an out-of-district public school or to pay for tuition to a private school of their choice. Most of them use the latter. Today, as Dominic mentioned, there are 80,000 children on the program. The average household income of the program is $25,000 for a household of four. 30% of the children are African American, 35% are Latino. 60% come from single-parent homes. They are the poorest performers in the public schools when they leave. We know that because we have their test scores when they leave and also when they're in the program. They are the worst performers in their public schools. When they come on the program, they turn around. By law, they must take either the state assessment or a nationally recognized standardized test approved by the DOE, and the scores must be reported to Florida State, right here, every year. And every year, Florida State issues a report on the learning gains of the kids down to the private school level. Once on the program, the kids in the program make learning gains equal to children of all incomes, including high-income children. It's turning them around, as we had hoped. What really encourages me, though, is the research has shown that the more a public school has kids come on this program, the bigger the learning gains for the children who remain in that public school. Understand what I'm saying. This program is helping the academic performance of the public schools. Now, we can't prove why, but if I had to guess, if you're taking the two hardest case kids out of a classroom, the teacher's job probably gets easier. It's also helping the taxpayers. Because the law limits the scholarship to 80% of what the state must send to a district to educate a child, it saves the taxpayers money. OPAGA, which I probably don't have to explain what that means in this room, it's sort of the state accounting office, OPAGA has issued reports showing that this program saves the taxpayers tens of millions of dollars every year in operating costs. Now, despite the benefits to the children on the program, to the children in the public schools, and to the taxpayers, in August of 2014, the Public School Teachers Union, the School Boards Association, and the state chapter of the NAACP filed a lawsuit asking the courts to shut down the program and evict the children from their schools. They did this even though the program serves less than 3% of the kids in the K-12 system. They did this even though the program serves or uses less than 2% of the state K-12 budget. One of their legal claims is that the program violates what's called the Blaine Amendment, which deals with the separation of church and state in our state constitution, because the children can choose faith-based schools. Well, I would remind you that we have something called the Voluntary Pre-K Program in Florida. In 2002, I believe, the taxpayers put into our constitution that every four-year-old gets taxpayer-funded pre-K. Well, 30,000 kids take money directly from the Treasury and use it to pay for tuition at faith-based pre-K, often at the same schools of the kids on this program. We also have a program called Bright Futures College Scholarships. Students take money directly from the Treasury and use it to pay tuition at faith-based colleges, including three of the four historically black colleges in our state. Near me in Lakeland, Southeastern University, wonderful college, or university, their charter says that we will prepare Christ-centered young men and women to enter the world. And I can't remember the rest, but all I know is that's a faith-based school right there. Have the plaintiffs challenged these two programs? No. The plaintiffs also make a claim that this program, the Tax Credit Scholarship Program, is not uniform or not the same as the traditional public schools. But didn't we just talk about how we're moving to this new definition where there are all these new forms of education? Is uniformity really the principle around which we want to organize public education in this new century? Have the plaintiffs targeted virtual learning or dual enrollment, charters or magnets, which are not uniform? No, they have not. No, they've only targeted the program that only serves low-income children who are doing very poorly in their assigned schools. Should they succeed, 80,000 children will be evicted from schools that are working for them. But they're not the only ones that will suffer. Districts, school districts, and taxpayers will suffer. 80,000 children will return to the public schools in a day. There's no other way for them to pay the tuition. We have 20,000 kids in Dade County, and they're concentrated. They're not spread out. In two zip codes in Orange County, in Orlando, two contiguous zip codes, we have 2,000 kids on this program. It will show up in one day. That's four or five elementary schools. I read the paper last week, and the superintendent of Osceola County Public Schools was lamenting the fact that they have to create 5,000 new spaces over the next 5 years and how difficult that's going to be. In fact, the quote was from the article, "The county hopes new charter schools will enroll some of the students and ease the strain on traditional schools." Ladies and gentlemen, we have 3,000 children on this scholarship program in Osceola County. If the superintendent is worried about absorbing 5,000 over the next 5 years, how will he absorb 3,000 in one day? Yes, if the plaintiffs win, there will be fiscal and operational chaos in the districts. Where does the case stand? Well, we won the first round. District Court Judge George Reynolds threw out the case, saying that the plaintiffs did not have the legal right or standing to bring the lawsuit because he couldn't see how they were harmed. And interestingly, that's the same exact reasoning that the U.S. Supreme Court used when they threw out a case, an almost identical case, with an almost identical program from Arizona a couple years ago. Indeed, no state Supreme Court has ever found a tax credit scholarship unconstitutional. And I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I'm not even a lawyer. But I can see the ramifications for our state should this program be found unconstitutional. If it's found to violate the Blaine Amendment, how cannot VPK and Bright Futures do the same? That money comes directly from the Treasury, where this money never reaches the Treasury. If the program is found to violate uniformity, how does not charter schools and the McKay program and the Gardner program, dual enrollment, virtual schooling? If you think that these risks to Florida's innovation in education are theoretical, think again. Because in addition to this lawsuit, there's also another lawsuit where plaintiffs are charging that the state does not spend enough on K-12 education. And I have no opinion on that. But in that lawsuit, the plaintiffs have said that charter schools and the McKay program violate the uniformity provision and are unconstitutional. Is public education in this new century only district schools with kids assigned by zip codes? Should, as the plaintiffs demand, the tax credit scholarship program, McKay scholarships, and charter schools be outlawed? Will we set legal precedents that render VPK, Bright Futures, virtual learning unconstitutional? Will Florida relinquish its leadership in educational innovation? Obviously, I hope not.
I had the opportunity to sit down with Kurt Lee just before his address. We discussed the lawsuit, the election season, and new laws regarding where kids can go to school.
Why has this become such a focal point?
I don't know. I mean, this program only serves, it serves less than 2% of the children in the K-12 system, and less than 2% of the K-12 budget. And it serves the poorest and the poorest performing children in the state. You know, there are other, one of the union's claims in the lawsuit is, well, we're upset because the children can go to faith-based schools with the program. Well, you know, we have something called the voluntary pre-K program, where there are tens of thousands of children who use money actually from the Treasury, as opposed to this program, where the money never reaches the Treasury. And VPK parents take money from the Treasury and send their children to faith-based pre-K programs. Often the same schools that serve step-up kids. Mm-hmm. The McKay Scholarship Program, money is taken directly from the Treasury, and children with special needs go to often the same schools that serve step-up kids. Mm-hmm. Again, faith-based schools. So if that was really the union's complaint, why aren't they filing a lawsuit against all those other programs? So I don't know why they have decided to focus on this one program that only serves the poorest performing, and primarily children of color. I don't understand.
It's an election year.
Yes.
We know all of the campaigns are getting up. They're all in pretty much full swing right now. What do you think are the top issues facing Floridians? When people go to the polls, what are some of the things they should be keeping in mind?
Well, I spend most of my time toiling in the fields of one issue, mm-hmm. and that is educational opportunities for low-income parents. So I'm kind of a person that has blinders on when it comes to other issues. But I do know certainly what's on the minds of the parents that I work with in these low-income neighborhoods. And there's nothing more important to them than the education of their children. And what's interesting to me is, when they hear about what happens up here in Tallahassee and about the lawsuit and the political battles, for them, it's just so simple. They're, what they say to me is, how come they just don't want what's best for my child? And then these parents have nothing against, their neighborhood school. They wish their neighborhood school worked for them like it works for their neighbor's kid. There's none of this. There's no partisanship. There's no divisiveness. There's just a focus on their children. And I wish we could do that even in this election year.
I was thinking about something. The bill that fascinates me the most is that school choice bill. So we can go to any school pretty much anywhere in or outside of a district.
In a public school.
In a public school.
Yeah.
Is this sort of... Could we see the end of neighborhood schools as we know them? And sort of, what happens to some of those rural districts, when people start leaving them? I think about Jefferson up here, which is the worst performing school district in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Population 1,200 kids, and a lot of them come into Leon.
Mm-hmm.
Do we foresee some of those tinier districts maybe start to fail because people are leaving and they're so tiny, they already don't have a tax base. They can't support the ones that remain in there.
I don't know. You look at places like Dade County, mm-hmm. where they've had a lot of choice for a long time. And I really give the superintendent of Dade, Alberto Carvalho, a lot of credit. He recognized early on that parents really want options for their mm-hmm. children. A lot of them want a very strong neighborhood school, and he says, "Look, I'm going to make the neighborhood schools as strong as we can." He said, "But other children, they need something different." And he said, "Well, you know what? Our district is going to create options for them." And so I think the key is we have to be less concerned about systems and more concerned about children and individual children. But also try to create the support systems that can prevent what you describe from happening. Mm-hmm. I'm not an expert enough to know what those systems are, but I'm a huge supporter of the public schools in my own district. Again, as I said earlier, I am agnostic as to what kind of school kids go to, but all that matters to me is that low-income families have the option to find the one that's best for their kid.
Thanks to the Economics Club of Florida and John Kirtley. You've been listening to What's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. I'm Lynn Hatter. Taylor Cox provided technical assistance. Please join us again next month for more discussions on the issues impacting our state.